You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, economists are warning of a looming retirement crisis with not enough savings for seniors. We'll learn more about what's causing the problem and what solutions are out there. Now it's Food Friday. With back-to-school time getting closer, it might mean the start of more late-night dinners as kids get back from sports practice or extracurriculars. So what can you cook when you're on the clock? Our next guest is here with some easy, healthy, and delicious dinners for those school nights, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a go-to dish or kind of meal to make on that busy school night? Do you have a family favorite meal? To avoid the dishes, do you have a one-pot or one-bowl meal that you like the most? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Aaron Clark is the creator of the recipe website WellPlated.com and the author of the Well-Plated Cookbook, Fast Healthy Recipes You'll Want to Eat. Aaron, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Now, let's set the scene a little more. I've been there. You know, I get home from work. The kids are just getting home from practice or whatever. I would ideally like to have a meal that they can eat before they're in bed. This is a serious challenge for family cooks, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a challenge. I think the question of what should we have for dinner is always on everyone's mind. And it's a question that you have to answer every single night.
Yep. Now, let's look at some different categories. One of my solutions, and you're a fan too, is the slow cooker. A little advanced preparation, obviously. Can you talk about the role of the slow cooker in answering that what's for dinner question?
Absolutely. The slow cooker is just such an effective tool because it gives you flexibility. I don't know about you, but at the end of the long day, when I come home, the last thing that I want to do is cook. You're tired, and that is a moment where you might be really tempted to turn to takeout or a frozen pizza. But if you've done the work earlier in the day with the slow cooker, it's almost like you are your own personal chef because you just get to come home, smell that wonderful dinner ready for you. I know that this is a favorite of my sister's too. She has four little girls, and so really the only time she ever has to herself is when they're napping. So the slow cooker lets her get everything ready for their dinner in advance. And then when the kids wake up, she can be there and not have to stress about dinner.
Well, the thing, I don't mind the cooking at that stage. It's the thinking. And that's having something
in
the slow cooker. You've done the thinking in advance.
Yes.
Now you gave us a recipe. You gave us a few recipes. One of them uses a slow cooker. People can find this at WPR.org/Food Friday. And this sounds awesome. A slow cooker honey pulled pork. Tell us about this.
Yes, you really, when you are looking for a total crowd pleaser, as well as when you're looking for a meal that will really stretch your dollar, especially right now with grocery prices where they are, it is really hard to beat a pork shoulder or pork butt. The terms are used pretty interchangeably. And if you make a big slow cooker of pulled pork, you actually can, it's pretty much impossible to overcook it. So you can start it the morning of, it yields a whole bunch. It's not too expensive per pound. And the ways that you can use it just go on and on. You can make, we love to make sandwiches with some coleslaw on top. It actually makes a really delicious pulled pork quesadilla. If you're in a big hurry, one of my favorites that is really nutritious and just a no-brainer is to put it on top of a baked potato or a baked sweet potato, add some cheese, some chopped green onion, and it is just so, so tasty. And if you, you know, this is great if you have a big household or a party of people you're trying to serve. Or like for me, we just have a household of two, but I love it because I can portion it and freeze it. And then just in the morning, all I have to do is pull out a container. Boom, dinner is good to go.
You mentioned, there's a couple things I want to follow up on this slow cooker honey pulled pork. First of all, you mentioned a couple cuts that you use. And that made me realize, reading this one earlier, something that went wrong. A bad pulled pork, I mean, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't great. I used a pork tenderloin. You say don't use a pork tenderloin for pulled pork.
No, pork tenderloin. I mean, don't get me wrong. Pork tenderloin is absolutely delicious. It is actually, it's great for fast dinners because you can, it only takes about 15 minutes to cook it in the grill or in the oven or the air fryer. However, it is a very lean cut. And what lean cuts respond well to is kind of that quick and dirty, high temperature cook time, get them done before they have a chance to dry out. A cut of pork, like pork shoulder, or for example, a beef equivalent would be chuck roast, which is really popular for pork roast. It's a really tough cut of meat with just a lot of fat in it. And if you were to just try to cook it right away, it would not taste good. But that low, slow cooking really draws out, like breaks down the fibers, breaks down that fat, and makes it this really luscious cut of meat. Pork tenderloin doesn't have any fat to render. So instead of ending up with this juicy tender pork, you end up with, unfortunately, a hockey puck.
Now, you also like to make your own homemade barbecue sauce for this recipe. Why do you like to do that as opposed to the store-bought?
Definitely. So, and if, I think it's pretty common for all of us, you know, we're all, when you're trying to think about ways that you can just eat a little better and some small tweaks that you can make, a really big lesson that I have learned is just the amount of sugar that is in a variety of different store-bought products. And a big place where it hides is tomato-based products like barbecue sauce, and ketchup is another big one, but particularly barbecue sauce. And I have found that I can create the same amazing flavor just using tomato paste, a little bit of pure maple syrup, which is a more natural sweetener, and it tastes just smoky and delicious, and some spices. So there's just some, there's not only is it better for you, but there's just this immense satisfaction in knowing that you've created something from scratch. You know exactly what's in it, and also it's just absolutely delicious.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Aaron Clark, creator of WellPlated.com. Zillions of recipes there. Author of the book, The Well-Plated Cookbook. She is helping us get ready for the school year. Meals that are fast, easy to prepare on that limited amount of time between school, after school, and bedtime. You could join in if you have a question, if you are staring at this dilemma over the next few weeks, or if you found great solutions, if you have a family favorite that's easy to make. The kids love it. Hopefully you like it too. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Okay, Aaron, another recipe you got for us. Egg roll. Oh, that sounds fussy. Wait, egg roll in a bowl. So it's a deconstructed egg roll. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. So, I mean, who doesn't love egg rolls? Ever since I was a little girl and we were begging my mom to pick up takeout, we always, always, always had to include an order of egg rolls. But making an egg roll, while delicious, is kind of fussy. You need to make the filling, and then you have to stuff and form the egg roll. And then egg rolls are actually deep fried. There's a reason that we enjoy them as an appetizer. Well, I've discovered that you can take that same yummy filling with the ground beef, the shredded vegetables, and turn it into a fast 30-minute dinner. So it is a deconstructed, I call it egg roll in a bowl because it's kind of a deconstructive egg roll. You serve it over rice. And then what makes this recipe really, really fast is a bag of store-bought broccoli coleslaw. Chopping vegetable, you know, when you're trying to eat healthy and eat vegetables, the fact is, chopping vegetables takes time, and it's hard to find a workaround for that. But I find that broccoli slaw, which is just shredded cabbage, broccoli, a whole bunch of other veggies, it's amazing for throwing into stir fries because it takes zero prep. It softens and the taste becomes really mild, so kids don't mind it either. And I don't have to do anything other than open the bag.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Dwayne is with us in Wausau. Hi, Dwayne.
Hey, good afternoon. So, there's this, you know, it's chicken pepperoni, or it's called like Mississippi chicken. You take, I like using boneless, skinless chicken thighs and breast. Thighs give it a little better flavor. And then you just dump in those jars of either banana peppers in the brine, put the juice and everything in with the chicken, some ranch, seasoning packets, you know, one or two of those, and a little couple pats of butter, and 6 hours on, 7 hours on low or whatever, and man, you shred it up, and you can also use hotter peppers like the Giardiniera. I'm pronouncing that, but the
Sure.
chicken pepperoncini is a good, easy.
And
And you put
that's
it on buns or with mashed potatoes or rice.
one you're doing in, like you said, in the slow cooker, Dwayne.
Crockpot.
Crockpot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dwayne,
One time I
thanks.
said, "Oh, you do it at 6 hours on high in the microwave," and the lady goes, "6 hours in a microwave?"
Yeah, that would be a vaporized chicken. Dwayne, thanks a lot for sharing that. Yeah, I mean, you can get really fancy with crock pots, Aaron, or, and I've done this, I put in some chicken and some salsa and, you know, maybe a little spices. You could, there are options to do things. It sounds like this chicken pepperoncini is pretty quick to pull together in the morning.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. I've done that with the with Italian beef, where you use the jar of giardiniera, or
Oh,
how do you
yeah.
pronounce that? That's a really good trick too, but I've never tried it with chicken. That sounds fantastic.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Duane. We are talking to Aaron Clark on this week's edition of Food Friday. Aaron's the creator of the recipe website, wellplated.com, author of the book, The Well-Plated Cookbook, Fast, Healthy Recipes You'll Want to Eat. Aaron's with us to talk about how we can make back-to-school dinners that are quick, easy, healthy, and that people will want to eat, including young people. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a go-to where you keep the ingredients ready all the time for when you need that quick dinner? Tell us about it. Or if you have a question, if you need some advice from Aaron, you can call in too. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Aaron Clark, cookbook author, founder of the cooking site WellPlated.com, talking to us about how we can make easy and delicious dinners for the back-to-school season when we are often on the clock. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a go-to meal for this scenario? Do you have a question for our guest? Call in at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Cyril is with us in Madison. Cyril, hi.
Hi there. Glad to have this subject for a discussion. I grew up with a stay-at-home mom, and we basically ate whatever was prepared for us, and that was that. My kids, I've been a stay-at-home dad for a lot of years, and it was my duty to prepare the food. And a lot of times, even though I know what they like, I would prepare something, and they'd come from school or wherever at the end of the day, and I'd tell them what I'd made, and I'd hear, "Oh, I'm not hungry for that," or, "Oh, I wanted something different," or even my wife would come home from work and say, "Oh, we had a smorgasbord at lunch, and I just don't have room for any of this stuff," so I end up with 3 days of leftovers, which mostly I eat because nobody else will.
Sorry, man. I've been there. That's the worst. Yeah, when nobody wants to eat what you've cooked. I think you pay for cooking lessons for those kids, and they can pull together their own meal. But do you have thoughts, Aaron? You know, sometimes I would do something like, you know, a variety, like a salami platter with cold vegetables, or I call it a relish tray or whatever you want, like something where you can kind of have a variety of stuff to pick out of to help preempt that fussiness. Any thoughts on ways to tackle that?
You know, that is really hard, and I'm sorry that you're going through that. I know it's a thing that happens to everyone, and it's just I hate it when I spend time on a meal and someone's like, "Oh, no, that wasn't what I was in the mood for." I totally get wanting to say like, "Oh, well, you can just make your own dinner then."
Oh, yeah.
Which was probably what my mom would have said to us, to be honest.
Same.
With you. But I love that idea of kind of making it an assemble your own. I think there's a lot of fun things that you can do with that just get kids feeling a little more involved. And so something really fun to do could be a make your own baked potato bar, where you have a pot of chili, just some different toppings for the potato. Then if someone's really hungry, they want to put that hearty chili on top, they can. If your wife, for example, isn't super full, she might just want, you know, a handful of cheese. You even can add roasted broccoli to it to get another veggie in there. And then what is kind of nice about the different components too, is that if at the end people don't end up eating it, you can still have different options for ways to reheat the leftovers. Mm. So for example, if you did chili, you could do chili the next night with some toppings. You could do a chili dog. You could have the potatoes left over to enjoy as a side or as mashed potatoes. Just, I completely understand wanting to make the most of your efforts. And I just want to say that that's so commendable that you're doing that for your family.
Yeah. And think Cyril, taco bar, sandwich bar, wrap bar, like, so, oh, I'm fussy about that ingredient, but I'll eat this other stuff. Maybe that'll help. I don't know.
Make your own pizza is a fun one.
Yeah.
And then you can just keep the dough in the fridge. If people want pizza, you
Brilliant.
Make the pizza. If they don't, they can fend for themselves.
Yeah. Or flatbreads. Don't even need to make a dough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for that call. Thanks for that call, Cyril, at 800-642-1234. Krista is with us now in Mequon. Krista, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your selection? What's your go-to option, Krista?
Oh, well, recently I've just been doing these. It's called a sheet pan quesadilla, and it's fun to get the kids involved helping to make it, and it doesn't take very long at all if you want to do a hamburger or chicken or even a vegetarian option. I just saute up the red peppers or green peppers, whatever kind of peppers you want, and onions, and you can even use leftover chicken in this, which I've used, or you can fry up some hamburger. But you basically fan out the flour tortillas in a cookie sheet pan and fill the cookie sheet pan up with your protein and your vegetables and black beans and cheese. And then it's fun that for the kids to fold it all up. You're kind of folding it up like a present. And then you put another sheet pan on top of it, and you put it in like a 375-degree oven. And it comes out nice and crispy in about a half hour, and we cut it up into slices. And then, like you guys were talking about, you can add your own toppings or lettuce. And it's great for leftovers because you can pull it out of the fridge and eat it cold or warm it up again. It's just a good meal for the kids to get involved in making. And it's a good thing to enjoy for a crowd, too. So I've made it for parties. And
fantastic. Krista,
it's on Pinterest. You can see it on Pinterest all over, but it's a good thing to make.
Krista, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Yeah, I do something like that. My version of chilaquiles is very inauthentic, no matter how you want to define the word. Aaron, anything like that, like a quick oven? Yeah, it's basically a casserole, a quick assembly casserole. Anything that that you think of in that category?
First of all, I am hungry after hearing that.
Well, it's Food Friday. I'm always, my mouth's watering.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
You know, sheet pan, I just say if you have a sheet pan, you've got a plan. It is just one of the most amazing, versatile tools. I love anything that minimizes my cleanup, because even though I love to cook, I despise doing dishes, as I suspect do most of us. So whatever, I'll do something where whatever vegetables I have left in my fridge at the end of the week, you know, maybe half a head of broccoli here, red bell pepper there. I'll chop it up, add some salt, pepper, you know, and then whatever seasoning I'm in the mood for that night. You can do a version with, you can add Italian seasoning. You can add chili and cumin. Yeah. If you want to go that Southwest route, get the vegetables started. And then at the end, we'll throw on shrimp. We'll throw on boneless, skinless chicken breasts. And then everything finishes cooking together on that same pan. And if you go to my website, wellplated.com, I have a category called One Pan Meals, and I have dozens of sheet pan recipes in there. I just love them. I love them.
Thanks again for that suggestion, Krista. It's Food Friday. Erin Clark is with us from wellplated.com, author of the Well Plated Cookbook. She's helping us develop some go-to meals for after school, because school is coming back soon. We'll go back to your calls in just a moment. But Erin, I wanted to ask about a third recipe you shared with us at WPR.org/Food Friday. You call it homemade hamburger helper. I'll call it that too, to market it in your own household. I understand you had to come up with another name.
Yes, I did, because my husband, and I have to say, I had a little bit of baggage from hamburger helper myself. I think I called it like creamy beef and noodles. I think we all have this idea of, or at least I did, this idea of hamburger helper as something that was kind of a last resort. You know, you probably don't have the most like nutritious attitude towards it, and for good reason. But there is just something so comforting about noodles and a creamy sauce with ground beef. I came up with a way to make it from scratch that is just in one pot. So you have your sauce, cook your ground meat, and then you add the noodles and liquids straight to the same pan. And not only does that save you from having to boil a separate pot for pasta, but also because the noodles cook in the sauce, they release starches, and that makes the sauce really rich and silky. I also add, I know hamburger helper sounds, this is going to sound like the funniest adjective ever to use in a sentence with it, but I'm telling you, this hamburger helper truly tastes gourmet, if there can be such a thing. I add a little smoked paprika, a little bit of hot sauce, and a little bit of Dijon mustard, and it just elevates the flavor. I love this dish because it touches on the nostalgia of my childhood, but it is a meal that I genuinely enjoy. All my friends enjoy it. I've made it for my nieces multiple times. It's easy on cleanup, and it's good for you too.
Find that at WPR.org/Food Friday, along with a couple other recipes from Erin. Back to your calls now. Liz is with us in Menominee Falls. Hi, Liz.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I would love other ideas for vegetarian meals. One of my kids has really become pretty much primarily vegetarian. So yeah, whether it's slow cooker or in the oven, what other ideas do you have that's vegetarian?
Liz, thanks for that call. Erin, that egg roll bowl, you can make that vegetarian. You had thoughts, I think.
Absolutely. You can. I don't know how your kids feel about tofu. I always say that with a little hesitation because I think that people have really fixated idea of what tofu is, with what tofu is being gross or bland or mushy. And you know what? Tofu can taste gross or bland or mushy, but it can also be absolutely fantastic. When you crumble it and saute it, it gets a little crispy and it is almost symbolic of like meat crumbles. There's another plant-based protein called tempeh that also really can taste a lot like meat. It's just, think of it as a blank canvas and you can season it any way you want. One of my favorites is I do kind of a copycat P.F. Chang's lettuce wrap that is in my cookbook, where you saute tofu with mushrooms in this really rich hoisin sauce. It's so satisfying. And I've served it to multiple friends and nobody ever thinks that it's tofu. Some other great dishes that are vegetarian, you can't go wrong with different noodle stir fries. Again, you can add tofu if you want to add some protein. I love doing casseroles where, if you think of a classic chicken and rice casserole, a way that you can kind of remake that is instead to do quinoa, because that is higher in protein. Add some veggies like sauteed broccoli or carrots, whatever your family likes. And then I like to toss a can of white beans in with that. Beans are a fantastic source of protein. You still get that cheesy, hearty, comforting casserole feeling without the meat. And I'm a big proponent that, yes, like, meat is delicious, but it does not have to be the star of the show. And you can absolutely have a satisfying meal that doesn't involve meat. So I would just encourage, say, think about those white beans in your casserole. Think about different things that you can do with soups and vegetarian chilies. And then there's a lot of great vegan stir fry options out there too.
Liz, thanks for that call. And Erin, that's all the time we have. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Erin Clark, creator of the recipe website, wellplated.com, author of the book, The Well-Plated Cookbook, Fast, Healthy Recipes You'll Want to Eat. Erin helped us get going on our back-to-school cooking with some easy, tasty meals. Find recipes from Erin at wpr.org/foodfriday. Now, economists are warning of a potential retirement crisis looming in the U.S. Many Americans don't have employer-sponsored retirement plans and find themselves short on savings. And that was happening even before the pandemic. Add in 2 years of pandemic disruption, plus inflation, fears of a recession. It all leads to big concerns about a big group of baby boomers on their way into retirement. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How are your retirement savings, your retirement plans looking? Are you worried about having enough for retirement? For you? Or maybe for a parent. If you're already retired, how did the process go for you? If you're younger, have you found ways to start saving yet? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. Teresa Ghilarducci is a nationally recognized expert on labor and retirement security. She's an economics professor at the New School in New York. Her books include How to Retire with Enough Money and How to Know What Enough Is, and Rescuing Retirement, a Plan to Guarantee Retirement Security for All Americans. Teresa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, I'm so glad. This is really an important topic.
It's a topic you've been following for years. Can you set the stage, the problems we had before we even got to the pandemic? What were things looking like?
Yeah, so before we got to the pandemic, we had 40 years of people hoping that the do-it-yourself system would work. We had 40 years where people were either depending upon their 401k, taking a little money out of their 401k, not having a 401k. And we watched the Social Security system kind of cut back benefits because they were raising the retirement age. You could get full benefits. So we were crossing our fingers and doing lots of forecasting about what a fully mature, what I call the do-it-yourself or the 401k modeled kind of retirement plan would look like. And so was the rest of the world, because the United States really went far on the limb to say, hey, in the 70s, we're going to cut back on Social Security, we're going to cut back on these defined benefit plans, and we're going to introduce, it's really started in the beginning of the 80s, these voluntary plans where your employer can provide them or not provide it, you can join it or not join it, and then we'll give you tax breaks for it, you know, if you're in the higher brackets. So we've now had 40 years to look at that. And before the pandemic, stock market was doing pretty well, and older workers who had a college education were keeping their jobs. So I was really concerned about what I call the tale of two retirements, that one group might be sailed into retirement, keep their standard of living by working a few more years, but others were not able to keep their jobs. They were being pushed out, and their retirement savings and Social Security was not going to be enough to keep their living standards. So we were already forecasting middle class, so I'll do this real slow and I'll stop talking, that 40% of middle class older workers, you know, on the verge of retirement, would be what we call downwardly mobile when they retire, that they would have to downsize, they may even have to live in poverty. And then the pandemic came.
Yeah, and then obviously the pandemic did a lot of things to the economy as it affects retirement planning, especially for this generation coming into retirement. What were some of the biggest impacts?
Yeah, so a lot of people looked at a lot of aspects of the pandemic. Since I'm obsessed, you know, with retirement and older workers, I just had my eyes on the 38 million workers who were over 52 but yet not had retired. And I watched to see what happened in April, in May. Remember those dark days of 2020? And we saw a big upsurge in what we call excess retirements. You know, that we knew that about a million people every 9 months or so would retire. They'd be pushed out or they would voluntarily leave. But we had a pretty good sense of what the normal trend was. And we saw a huge uptick and people saying that they were retired. And we then probed to see whether or not it was voluntary or involuntary, because you can kind of tell if it's voluntary if you just ask a few more questions. And we found that, which is like, did you retire before your boss laid you off? You know, those kinds of obvious questions. Did you retire because you felt you had enough money? And we were finding the vast majority of people who told government surveyors that they were retired were really unemployed. So we saw what we might call in the press retirement. What I saw was just extra, extra unemployment. And people with the least education, with just high school degrees, were much more likely, twice as much more likely to be involuntary retired.
Part of that might be service sector jobs that took an early hit from the pandemic. You know, there's got to be some people who are worried, do I want to go back if I'm in an at-risk group to this job? Is that part of the involuntary-ish retirement story?
You're right. You asked, like, the best questions, because we spent 8 months really investigating whether or not it was kind of a supply problem or a demand problem. Was the fear of the virus and the way it affected older people, not younger people, really driving this excess trend? And we concluded it was absolutely not. That if people could get a hazmat suit and go back to work, they would, because they really needed the money. What we saw instead were concerns of employers that they would have expensive older workers on their hands. Remember, this was the end of the Trump administration when a lot of labor law regulations were not being enforced. So it was this kind of golden moment where employers could push out older workers without a fear of a age discrimination suit. Older workers are often more expensive. And because this was a medical emergency, employers were really afraid of the extra cost of the medical care.
Okay, so for this group, as you mentioned, often lower education, maybe lower paid jobs. Yeah. I'm guessing lower retirement savings, therefore leaving the workforce earlier. Well, that sounds like a recipe for really bad. What are you seeing?
Yeah, it was really bad. You know, and it was because it was kind of a once in a lifetime chance these employers could push out their older workers. So what does it mean? Let me count the ways. Let's talk about finances. It means that if they have any savings, they'll draw down on their savings faster than they'll cut their consumption, because it's really hard to downsize. It's kind of expensive to downsize. So they'll draw down on their savings they were planning to spend, you know, in their 60s, they're now spending in their late 50s. It also means that they're planning on taking their Social Security earlier, you know, at 62, when you get the lowest amount, rather than kind of waiting till 64, 65, and if you can, you know, up until 70. So they're taking a lower Social Security, lifetime Social Security benefit. They're drawing down on their savings. They may be going into debt, though we didn't see big increases in debt, but they also may not go to the doctor. And that means when they hit Medicare age, you know, they're going to come into that program much sicker than they would have been if they had maintained their health insurance. So a lot of the pain of this early retirement will be felt a little bit later. I think the immediate effects have been shame and isolation.
Talking to Teresa Ghilarducci, economist, expert on retirement, looking at looming retirement problems, already existing retirement problems when it comes to savings for a lot of people. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, with your experiences. Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hello.
Hi, good afternoon from northern Wisconsin. It's a beautiful day up here. I'm 62. I'm 62. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the topic because I have a plan. When I graduated from college, I had a speaker tell me, you know, you might just plan on different careers in your lifetime, that your life might be more fun changing from one industry to the next. So that's kind of what I did. And I have a Teamster pension in my back pocket. So when I retire, I'm going to get that pension at 65. So I'm planning to work till I'm 65 before I collect Social Security. And I feel pretty confident about my income at that time. But when I look back on my life, I think it's been pretty fun.
Jeff, glad you had fun along the way. But Teresa, I think there's a lot of people out there, maybe the younger more so, saying, what's a pension?
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say congratulations, Jeff. And what a good personality you have. Like and what a good head you have for finance. What I heard was that you made sure that you had a pension. You know, a union pension is often some of the better pensions because you have a whole union behind you always trying to make it better. Now, are you in the central states? Because that's had some problems. But if you're not in the central states, it's probably a pretty good union plan, and it's insured by the federal government. So congratulations. You're 62. You have 3 more years. You sound like you don't have any health problems and that you might be in a job that you enjoy. And I suspect that you'll make it to 65 and you'll be fine. You will have to scrutinize your Medicare Advantage kinds of plans. Make sure you do that well. And keep up your health. What I always like to tell people in situations like you, where you don't have to do really that much more, but to make yourself better, pretend you're a diabetic right now and just eat like a diabetic would. Low sugar, you know, do your exercises. Because if you can stave off that disease, 50% of people, you know, in the 60s have it, you can save a lot of money. It's a lot more fun, but you can also save a lot of money because diabetes is expensive. So I don't have much advice for you. I just have a lot of congratulations.
Thanks for calling in, Jeff. We're talking to economics professor Teresa Ghilarducci from the New School in New York, author of books about retirement, looking at retirement crisis. A lot of people with little or no savings as they near retirement. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you have an experience to share, if you have a question for our guest about dealing with retirement, if you have thoughts on bigger picture solutions for these problems, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Teresa Ghilarducci, economics professor at the New School in New York, expert on retirement. With us today, looking at the causes of, potential solutions for, an impending retirement crisis in the U.S., you could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, experiences, questions. That's 800-642-1234. Teresa, before I go back to our callers, I know you've written about kind of what individual people can do to prepare for retirement. You've also looked at big picture systemic solutions. Do you want to hit us with some of the main ones you'd like to see?
Yeah, no, I think this is the time, and we have a Congress that kind of works for once. And so so maybe there are ears to hear, especially in your Wisconsin senators. This is a time we should really consider lowering the Medicare age. Remember those people that lost their jobs also lost their health care. Obamacare is pretty expensive for older workers. They're going to be sicker by the time they get to Medicare. Studies have shown that if we lower that Medicare age, you know, to 60 or even 50, you do two things. One, you make sure that people are as healthy as they can be as they get older. It actually saves money. But you also help employers get excited about hiring an older worker, because if Medicare is first payer, the health insurance for an older worker is not as expensive as it is now. Right now, a kind employer, you know, one that's not bigoted, has to think twice about hiring an older worker because the health insurance costs are so high. So we should really lower the Medicare age and make it first payer. The other thing to do is to really fix our pension system. If anyone has been following me for my whole life, I have been incredulous about why we don't have a pension system that everybody has on top of the Social Security system that everybody has. You know, Social Security is great. It's insurance. You pay for it by premiums. The younger people pay for the older people. But we also have a system that only some people have where they save. That money gets invested into the economy. And by the time that person retires, they can draw down on those investments. And when that works, like Jeff with his Teamster pension, it works. But if people don't have those savings accounts, we can't have that virtuous circle of helping the economy and helping somebody. So I've been advocating, and I think we might be close in the next year or so, to have everybody at work have two kinds of pensions, the Social Security and a defined contribution plan that has a what we call characteristics of that old pension system, because you can take it out only when you retire and it lasts for the rest of your life. You know, this isn't that hard. It really isn't that hard. We also need, I've been working with a lot of people these last 2 years because the pandemic has laid bare how awful our unemployment insurance system is for older workers. Older workers take twice as long to find a job if they've been laid off. And so those unemployment insurance benefits should last twice as long for somebody over 40 or 50. And our training programs are really oriented towards younger workers. We have a lot of people like Jeff who have a lot of wisdom and experience, but their industry kind of, fell apart, you know, beneath them. You learned that in Wisconsin. I lived in Indiana for a long time. These are really skilled industrial workers that don't have an industry anymore. And so to retrain them for other jobs that require the same kind of judgment and dexterity is vital, but we do not have a system like that in this country. So there's a range of policies that make work for older people good and make pensions for the people who need to retire and want to retire better. And we just have not paid attention to those needs because it's a slow-moving crisis.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jason is with us in Elkhorn. Jason, hi.
Yes, good afternoon from cloudy southern Wisconsin.
Okay.
What's your question, Jason?
So my question is, my first employer did not offer a 401k until I had been there for probably 10 or 12 years. So I feel like I'm trying to make up for lost time. So my question is, I've lived pretty tight, kept the original house that we bought and did not buy a new home every time we got a raise. And instead we took our raises and put them into our 401k. So I'm to the point now that I'm saving roughly $25,000 a year into my 401k. Is this the right thing to do, or should I be doing something different with my money?
Jason, how old are you?
I am 47.
And how old is your wife, if you have one?
She is 40. She is also 47.
And she has the same strategy. She has a pension.
So, no,
that's
actually,
great.
She has a pension.
Okay.
So I'm trying to make up for what I didn't save.
Gotcha, Jason.
Well, it sounds like I'm going to put you on the cover of my next book. that you are doing exactly the right thing. Not only because you are paying attention to your lifestyle and you're satisfying, you're not maximizing, you know, all your spending. You're satisfied with what you have. You also realize that you lost a lot in those first 10 years in your 30s, which is a, you know, we should go arm in arm and say to 30-year-olds, hey, you know, we don't give you very much, but you do have time. So you did lose a lot of buildup in those 10 years. So you're making up for it. You're also putting your money in a tax sheltered plan as well as your wife, even though it's kind of set up for her, because you get a lot of savings by that money not being taxed going in, and it's not taxed while it's building up. I spent last week with a very smart PhD historian who teaches at a prestige university, convincing him to save in his 401k because he was leaving so much money on the table, and you're not doing that. The only place you probably could improve is to be very diligent about where your 401k money is being invested. And I would suggest that it be invested in indexed funds because you can save money on fees. Do you want to tell me a little bit about your portfolio?
We don't have too much time left, actually, and I want to get one more caller in. Jason, thanks for calling. I hope that helps. Jim is with us now in Cedarburg. Jim, hi.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, thanks, Bob. Great show again. Hello. Could you speak to the cap on Social Security and why the politicians are just so, I don't know what you want to say, recalcitrant? They just won't raise the cap. Thank you.
You know what? Yes. So what Jim is talking about is that people who make $13 million a year, big executives, Bill Gates, you know, makes $50 million a year, are treated by the Social Security system as if they make about $140,000 per year. And they pay their taxes for Social Security, the first day of New Year's Eve. If we raise the cap and those $50 million executives pay their Social Security tax on $50 million, just like they pay on their Medicare, we would not have any kind of financial crisis in Social Security, and we could even expand benefits. I think, Jim, that we have a coalition in Congress among Democrats, and if they keep the majority, that we will see that cap raised and more money come into Social Security to secure Social Security. So I'm more optimistic about this than I've been in 35 years.
Thanks for the call, Jim. And just our last minute or so, Teresa, for somebody who's approaching retirement and is feeling a sense of panic, I know everybody's situation is going to be different. Can you give them some starting points to start to try to tackle that?
Yeah, I will. Please try to keep your job as long as you can, and just until this spate of inflation is over. And the older you are before you collect your Social Security, or draw down your savings, you're going to be better off on the margin, but you'll be better off. So individually, if you can keep your job and keep saving, you'll be better. Every little bit helps. Really, don't be afraid to ask your boss for a raise. This is a time where profits are quite high. So get a little moxie. Get a little group together to screw your courage to the sticking post. Raises are happening. Be careful with your health, even though if you're depressed and ashamed, kind of doing bad health habits is a way to go. This is a time to kind of really, really secure that, because that will save you money. Don't do anything rash about day trading or even trying to downsize now. That can be expensive. So hold the course.
Teresa, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thank you. And if people want to follow up with me, you can give them my email.
All right, we'll have that available for people who call in. Teresa Ghilarducci is a nationally recognized expert on retirement security, professor of economics at the New School in New York.